Good morning again. I want to mention our small group tonight we're not going to have here at the building. I'm sure people are busy with Christmas things and family, so enjoy that time. You get a pass for tonight. We'll be back meeting again the 1st in January, but tonight we won't be meeting. So we are concluding our series today called Come and Behold Him, where we are encouraging us as a church family to think about what it looks like for us to fix our eyes on Jesus, to be people who live not just during the Christmas season, but at all times with our eyes fixed on who Jesus is, to think and dwell on the fact that God has come to earth. And I get that for some of us in here, this is going to be a hard Christmas. Maybe you lost someone who's important to you, and you're coming in here and you have a lot of weight. Something has happened in your life, and you aren't super excited about the Christmas season. I know that can be the case for some of us in here, and I get that. Then on the other end of the spectrum, some of you are coming in and you're really excited. You have just so much stuff. You don't even have enough time. You're flying somewhere. People are flying to you, and it's so busy, and your life is just filled with so many things. But the person on this end of the spectrum can miss the point of Christmas because they're so busy. There's so many things to go to. There's parties to attend. Life can be so crammed. So no matter where you are on this, and we all find ourselves somewhere along this spectrum, I hope that we find time to truly fix our eyes on Jesus, because it's amazing what can happen when we do. We saw the story last week of Mary, and one thing I hope you remember from this series is that scholars think Mary was probably a 12 or 13-year-old girl. When God comes and through the angel says, your life is going to be changed forever. And Mary is this peasant girl who doesn't have all of life figured out. And she says, basically, after one question, may it be so, I will be the Lord's servant. And that's a line that I wish we could all live with constantly. But it's difficult for us during the Christmas season to fix our eyes on Christ because there's a lot going on. As Eric mentioned, there's so many gifts to get for people. And I wanted to help you in case you are getting some gifts for people this Christmas, which you probably are unless you're Scrooge. I saw a list of the worst kinds of gift givers. So if you find yourself on this, you probably might want to switch up your gifts. The first is buying in bulk person from some sort of TV show or as seen on TV. You know, if you have four or five of those kind of looking things, you might want to reconsider what you're giving for Christmas this year. The second kind of worst gift giver is the person who, like, as the person is opening it or shortly after, explains how great of a deal they got on the gift. You almost can't let them open it without saying, you know, usually that's about $60, but I found it for $17.99. You wouldn't believe the deal you got. Don't explain the deal that you got to the person who you're giving the gift to. And finally, it's the person who is trying to be crafty but not. Like, they go onto Pinterest and they see this and they think, you know, that would be perfect to give to Brian. And then it comes out looking like this. And you just didn't get it right. You did not get it right, so don't go with it. You didn't make it happen. And Christmas can be such a great time, but it's a weird time. As well, there's a group, and their company is called Tipsy Elves, and they, in 2011, started selling horrible-looking Christmas sweaters. And you maybe have been to an ugly Christmas sweater party. Their first year, they sold $800,000 worth of ugly Christmas sweaters. And then the year after that, they sold $4 million worth of ugly Christmas sweaters. They went on a show called Shark Tank, and an investor decided to invest. They made $6 million the next year. Last year, in 2014, they made $20 million worth. Here's a couple examples of these ugly Christmas sweaters. I mean, it's just hideous, hideous stuff. The next one's a little bit sacrilegious, but I felt like it was okay to let this one go. And if you don't believe this happens, I kid you not, I was talking with Ryan Clark, and he told a story about how he and Kate were up, they went to an estate sale after church one day up in the hills in Glendale, and they found a box of Christmas sweaters that were from the Santa Claus, the old movie, The Santa Claus, and it was just full of all these sweaters, and they lit up. Ryan said he'll bring it to us some Sunday, I'll show it to you. It has a weird light-up thing, and there are just boxes and boxes of this guy's house, and they're saying, how do you have all, what is this? I've never seen this before. And the guy said, that he made those, and Disney thought they were so great that they asked for large productions of them, and they just kept making more and more. And he told them, it's because of these ugly Christmas sweaters that I was able to buy this house, like in the North Hills of Glendale. I kid you not, this stuff actually happens during Christmas. It's also a time for us that we can easily get sick. You know, everyone seems to have something. Carter even got sick last night, and he was up basically all night, and Mandy is a saint, and lucky for me, I said, I got to preach tomorrow, babe, so she handled it. So please pray that he's better by tonight for me. That would be great. But it's a time that so much stuff is going on. There's so much that is crammed in, and it can be a season of anxiety and stress and tension, when in reality it was supposed to be a season of fun and joy. In fact, a time to connect us to the real abundant joy of Jesus. And I think that when it comes to gifts, gifts can be a way that we can do that. But we need to realize, as Eric mentioned, that this is a time where we celebrate the perfect gift. The gift that you'll never unwrap and not want, the gift of our Son. And sometimes we can celebrate that through gift giving. In fact, scholars believe that the idea of Christmas gifts came from about the 4th century, when a guy named Nicholas of Myra decided to start giving gifts to orphans and people in his community who was around him. And he was such a generous person, not only during Christmas, but throughout the year, that they eventually decided in the Catholic Church to make him a saint. So he became Saint Nicholas in the 4th century, a name you might be familiar with. See, giving good gifts is something that I think is something that we can do as Christians, but we need to recognize that when we do that, we are just trying to point in the direction of the real giver, the direction that Jesus Christ came to earth. In Matthew chapter 7, Jesus says, if you then, though you're evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask? If you know how to give good gifts, how much more is your Father, the great giver, able to give you exactly what you need? And as we focus and think about the Christmas story, we get a chance to once again reflect, and this is why I love the Christmas season, reflect on this perfect gift. The gift of Jesus Christ, because it's a gift that changes everything. I'm going to read a familiar passage from Luke chapter 2, verses 8 through 18. There's an idea out of this that I want us to really consider today. And there were shepherds living out in the fields nearby, keeping watch over their flocks at night. An angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to the people, today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He's the Messiah, the Lord. This will be a sign to you. You will find a baby wrapped in clothes and lying in a manger. Suddenly a great company of the heavenly host appeared with the angel, praising God and saying, glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace to those on whom his favor rests. When the angel had left them and gone into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, let's go to Bethlehem and see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has told us about. So they hurried off and found Mary and Joseph and the baby who was lying in the manger. When they'd seen him, they spread word concerning what had been told them about this child, and all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds said to them. So these shepherds get word about what has happened. And I love how the angel says that a baby has been born to you. And they are excited by this news, and so they go and they start to make this journey to Bethlehem. And as they experience this, they see the joy of this, what this actually means. They're overcome, and they just start to share this story. I love how verse 18 says it, that all people who heard were amazed by this. They're amazed. And that's the idea I want to walk away from our sermon with this morning. Because some translations will say amazed. Others will say awestruck. Others will say filled with wonder. Because I believe that is the correct response to the Christmas season. To be filled with wonder. To be filled with hope. To recognize that this birth means so much that we should be filled with awe. When was the last time you were in awe? It's that feeling when, you know, you have chills maybe down your spine. You might have had it watching the new Star Wars movie, perhaps, if you went this weekend. I've heard it's good.
But when was the last time that you just saw something so beautiful or so profound or so moving that you couldn't help but just stand there and be amazed? I don't know about you, but I can so easily get caught up in being cynical and sarcastic. I can so easily break things down and critique things. I think it's a product of the fact that we had the Enlightenment come and then reason is now upon us, and we praise and worship reason in our minds, and intellect is a great thing, but we can think that that's the only thing, when in reality, we should be more amazed. We should live with more of a sense of awe, and we don't very often. We don't realize sometimes how blessed we are as modern people, especially people living in the United States. I read a stat that in medieval Europe, not that long ago, around one of every five children died before their first birthday. And only 50% of all children survived to the age of 10. The average family buried half of their kids. And these were kids who died sometimes in terrible ways, not in a sanitary hospital. It's ever easy for that to happen. This was not that long ago. And there are parts of the world where, unfortunately, those stats are still somewhat accurate. That's one of the things that I think our church is doing through people like Chris and Crystal to reach out to places like that. And even more recent, I was with Yvonne Smith this week, and we were doing some visiting with some of the shut-ins in our congregation, and we got to talking about how her family came here, and she said that they came from Oklahoma to California because her dad had heard there were some jobs here. And they drove out. She had found a journal that her mom had where she was writing down the expenses of the trip. It cost $13 for them to drive from Oklahoma to California. I know, it doesn't make sense. And hopefully that doesn't reveal Yvonne's age at all, but... And she said as they got here, as they were seeking out, her father was seeking out work, they were going from different places to different places and family members, and at one point she remembers that her dad had to borrow $5 from someone, and he did not want to do that. He didn't want to be somebody who did that, but he did that because his family needed it. And eventually it worked out, but she said that as they were beginning here, she said they were poor, but they didn't know it. And I think many of us, and I include myself in this, we're rich, but we don't realize it. We're very blessed, but we don't realize it. We'll sit on our phones and complain on Facebook or social media through this amazing device that we now carry the world around in our pocket about how long a line is somewhere. We critique everything and break it down immediately. We've lost the ability, I think, to just be in awe. And I think we need it, especially when it comes to our relationship with God. And that's why I love the Christmas season, because every year it comes back around and it reminds us that God has come down to earth. The Christmas season says, wake up, be aware, life is so much more beautiful and hopeful than you might have imagined. Wake up. The God of the universe came down in a manger, was born through this girl, showing us the great lengths that God will go to redeem and love his people. Every year at Christmas, we're offered the gift again of awe, to stand and be in awe of this miraculous story. The question is, will we accept this invitation? Will we come and truly behold the Lord? I love how Max Lucado says this in a long passage in a book called God Came Near. It all happened in a moment, a most remarkable moment. As moments go, that one appeared no different than any other. If you could somehow pick it off the timeline and examine it, it would look exactly like the ones that have passed while you have read these words. It came and it went. It was preceded and followed by others just like it. It was one of the countless moments that have marked time since eternity became measurable. But in reality, that particular moment was like none other. For through that segment of time, a spectacular thing occurred. God became a man. While the creatures of earth walked unaware, divinity arrived. Heaven opened herself and placed her most precious one in a human womb. The omnipotent, in one instant, made himself breakable. He who had been spirit became pierceable. He who is larger than the universe became an embryo. And he who sustains the world with a word chose to be dependent upon the nourishment of a young girl. God as a fetus. Holiness sleeping in a womb. The creator of life being created. God was given eyebrows, elbows, two kidneys, and a spleen. He stretched against the walls and floated in the amniotic fluids of his mother. God had come near. He came not as a flash of light or as an unapproachable conqueror, but as one whose first cries were heard by a peasant girl and a sleepy carpenter. The hands that first held him were unmanicured, calloused, and dirty. No silk, no ivory, no hype, no party, no hoopla. Were it not for the shepherds, there would have been no reception. Were it not for a group of stargazers, there would have been no gifts. Angels watched as Mary changed God's diaper. The universe watched with wonder as the Almighty learned to walk. God came near. This is the reality of Christmas. That God doesn't leave humanity far off, but God enters in, that God comes near. Ever wondered what it was like for Mary to watch Jesus grow up? What it was like as he would run in the backyard? What it was like as he probably annoyed her from time to time, maybe, as a young little boy? What it was like to watch him pray as he grew older? What it was like for her to watch as he grew up and lived. This is a story that is so familiar to us. Many of you, probably all of you, could have told me the story before you came in here. But it's one that should wake us up, because it's absolutely shocking that God would choose to enter into humanity. That God would choose to enter in and redeem the world. It's absolutely astonishing. It's unbelievable. And this is about this great gift. And we can miss the fact that God has come to earth with all the busyness and illness and all the stuff that goes around at Christmas. But Christmas is way more than presents. It's the very presence of God. And the question for us all is, will we receive this gift? Will we once again be in awe? Because as the first people hear this news, it says they are filled with wonder, because this is the way that we should receive it. We should be filled with awe and amazement and wonder. But the story of Christmas, I think, also gives us a warning, because for Jesus, there was no room at the inn. The question for us is, will we have room? Will we once again receive this good news? It's time for us all, whether you're really familiar with this story or not at all, to be astonished by it again, to be amazed by the Savior, to be filled with awe. I love how a priest says this, Robert Capone. He says, the most critical issue facing Christians is not abortion, lust, the breakdown of the family, moral absolutes, MTV, drugs, racism, or sexuality. These are symptoms of a deeper problem. The critical issue today is dullness. We've lost our astonishment. The good news is no longer good news. It is okay news. Christianity is no longer life-changing. It's life-enhancing. Jesus doesn't change people into wild-eyed radicals anymore. He changes them into nice people. And I completely agree with that. The good news is just okay news. That Jesus is a supplement that you take, just like the other vitamins that you take in the morning. That Jesus is just this thing that you're going to put into your life just a little bit. It's kind of adding it all in, you know, a mixture of work, mixture of family, mixture of Jesus. You kind of mix it all in and it all works. When in reality, the life-altering news of Jesus should change everything. It should change how we view our family. It should change how we view our work. It should change how we view our entire lives. It isn't just a supplement. It's everything. And when we once again hear the news that God has come to earth, we should be filled with awe, because I believe what your heart is truly in awe of eventually becomes what you worship. What your heart pauses at and says, this is such good news, whatever it is, your heart is eventually going to worship that thing. And again, I love how the angels deliver this message. They say, today, A baby has been born to you. And that's still so significant. A baby has still been born to us, that Christ has come for all of us, this great gift. And as the word starts to spread, all the people are filled with wonder, because this is the correct response, to be in awe of just how good God is. The invitation is to come and behold him, to see the goodness of the Lord, and to fix your eyes there. Henry David Thoreau says this so well. He says, the question is not what you look at, but what you see. And we need to truly see what this Christmas story is about. As the early Christian writers wrote about this Christmas story, joy is used 7 times in the birth narrative of Jesus. Like, it comes up just over and over again. The word joy comes up over and over. It's just dwelling in people's hearts. When we realize the goodness of this story, when we fix our eyes in the right place, we once again are filled with that kind of joy. And it's something that leads us to worship. Mandy and her family went to see Handel's Messiah this week. And it's one that has a very familiar chorus. We're going to play it as I'm speaking. I'm sure you know what this is. And she was doing this and taking part in this most famous piece of music, some people say. She realized just how important it was as they explained a little bit about the history of this piece. George Frederick Handel had written this in 1741, and they think that he did it over 24 days. He was just so moved by the glory and the goodness of God. In fact, he concluded this piece by saying, "This is for the glory of God." And actually, he wrote it as an Easter piece, but because of the start of it, he starts by detailing the birth of Christ. And so because of that, it's become a Christmas piece that is sung and performed all over the world at Christmas time. This is an unbelievable amount of work. This is just to show you how much music there is in this thing. And he wrote it in 24 days. There's 55 musical movements in it. And it has notes for an orchestra and a chorale, and James said a libretto. I don't even know what that means, but it's really important, I think. And this was just in response to how good God was. And it starts by telling the story of the birth. George Frederick Handel was so moved by the story of the birth of Christ that he couldn't help but write this out of the overflow of his heart. It was first performed in 1741 in Dublin, Ireland, and there was so much anticipation for it. And they wanted to get as many people in there as possible. And so they asked the men to leave their swords at home, and the women to not wear hoops in their dresses, so they could get as many people crammed in as possible to hear this thing. So thank you for leaving your swords at home today too, gentlemen. And he decided, George Frederick Handel decided, that he wanted to always have this dedicated to some form of charity. And so the first night it was performed in Dublin, Ireland, they donated some funds to people who were in debtors' prison. Because of the first performance of this piece, 142 indebted prisoners were free. Almost a year later, it went to London. And in London, he did the same thing, and he had a children's hospital and orphanage that they raised money for, and £7,000 were raised. In 1740, I did the math, I think that's like $1.5 billion today in our money. So £7,000, I made that up, but £7,000 were raised. You're like, wow, he's a real math whiz. £7,000 were raised when it was played in London. Handel always considered this the gift that was for the glory of God. And at the end of his life, he donated one of the original scores to the Children's Hospital in London so they could continue to perform it year after year. A scholar says, there's no telling just how much good this piece of music has done in the world. Every year, it's sung. Every year, people are once again moved with awe at just how beautiful it is, how this one man can be so moved by the glory and wonder of God. And this, church, is why awe is so important. Because when we put our awe in the right place, it leads your heart to wonderful worship, And that's great. It's a good thing that we worship well. But it also leads us to justice. It leads us to care about the right things. It leads us to be the kind of people who go and use money to set debtors free, to give our lives and what we've done to set orphans in a new path. See, getting praise and awe right leads us to be the kind of people that God has called us to be. There's no telling how much good this piece of music has done. And there's no telling how much good God continues to do in the world when we as his people get awe right, when we come and truly behold the Lord. When we get awe right, we get worship right, we get justice right. It all starts with awe, being in awe of just how good, how gracious, and how wonderful God is. When we get a chance to re-enter into this story every year, we must be astonished and amazed, just as the first people who started to hear it were. Because this story is amazing. It's not just a way to get your life a little bit better. It's a life-altering story. One that changes not only your life, but the life of others around you forever. Can you imagine those 24 days as Handel furiously wrote this? What if we lived with that kind of awe, with a sense of God's goodness? If we were able to really capture that feeling in our lives, just how wonderful it is that God sent his son to earth. Imagine the good news that we could share and the good things that we could do. The only correct response, I think, to hearing this story and to being once again in the presence of Christ as we realize that God has come to earth is to worship. And so, as James said, we save some of the real Christmas hymn home run hitters for us as we close this morning. And I want you to just maybe close your eyes and put your heart in the right place to really sing these out, to sing these with awe, because this isn't just a story that happened a long time ago. It's a story that happens again and again when we get our awe in the right place. There's no telling how much good this piece of music did, and there's no telling how much good we all can do if our hearts are in the right sense of God's presence, and if our hearts are in the right place with a sense of awe for just how good God is. Let's stand and worship together.